I call this meeting to the Committee on Children, Youth, and Families to order. Is there a quorum present? Yes? Quorum? Yes. We have a quorum. May I get a motion from whoever is so inclined on the minutes of February 11th?
So moved, Chair.
Vice Chair Hansen moves the minutes from February 11th. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails. The minutes are adopted. All right, we've got a fun day ahead of us today with a couple bills on the agenda. Now, we are going to start with Representative Nadeau's bill. Oh, prior to that, well, you can go ahead and sit down. But there is another thing that needs to be mentioned. If you look at your packets, you will find some testimony on a bill from the Minnesota Department of Health on the HF 22 that we heard last week. They requested to be testifying, and we overlooked them incidentally. So I wanted to make sure that we addressed that, and their testimony is available in writing in your packets. That bill has a long path, so there is more input to be had on it. But we apologize for overlooking a testifier. That is never our intention in this committee. Now we will begin with House File 633. Would you like to move your bill? Representative Nadeau.
I would move my bill, and I have an amendment. And I would like to move the amendment first. Right. Second.
Representative Dole moves the DE1 amendment. And if you quick give a rundown of that amendment.
Yeah. And thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members. Hopefully this is something that we can have a good conversation about today. The original bill was drafted as a credit. The amendment actually changes it, converts it, the benefit from a state-paid credit to a 50% market exclusion. So prior to this, it would have been it would have had a fiscal note where schools and municipalities would have had to been paid back by the state, and this is an exclusion.
Is there any discussion to the DE1 amendment? All right. Seeing no discussion, to get the bill in the shape the author would wish it, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails. The DE1 is adopted. Representative Nadeau, to your bill.
Thank you, members, and thank you, Mr. Chair. The effect of this bill is a 50% exclusion on property taxes that are attributed to the net capacity levies, and this is only for in-home family care providers. So Minnesota faces a significant challenge, and we've talked about this, and everyone agrees with this. And my goal is to try to build resilient child care, early education capacity in Minnesota. In 2021, the market rate for infant care at a center was $16,164. That was the sixth highest in the nation. We were the seventh highest in toddler care at over $14,000, and we were second in the nation for preschool, trailing only D.C., and that cost exceeded $16,000 as well. In 2011, we had 12,000 licensed child care providers in Minnesota. In 10 years, that number dropped to 7,150, and a license lookup on January 1st of this year indicated we have 5,782 active licenses today for in-home family care providers. As the number of providers for family care goes down, the costs and the wait lists go up. Our family child care providers have struggled the most, and the numbers have decreased by over 50% in the last decade. From 2000 to 2020, we've lost 40,000 licensed family child care slots. 37,000 of these were gained back in child care centers, which is great, but it's still a net loss of 3,000 slots. Outstate family care providers fared worse, since larger center-based facilities are less viable in less populated areas. Between 2000 and 2020, outstate Minnesota had a net loss of 20,250 child care slots. This bill is a very simple, common sense bill that I hope helps stabilize in-home family child care providers. It reduces child care wait times and helps build or rebuild the child care early learning system capacity that we have in Minnesota. It alleviates the financial burdens on our in-home providers. It stabilizes existing capacity and incentivizes new family care providers. It begins rebalancing that tax structure that we've actually ignored with in-home providers. I mean, there's some child care centers can now qualify as seminaries of learning for a complete property tax exemption. It was a recent Supreme Court case with Rainbow Early Education versus Goodhue County. So I'm trying to rebalance this. I'm trying to provide some relief for in-home family care providers. And with that, I will stand for questions.
Thank you, Representative Nadeau. There's one pause I want to do unrelated to your bill, but we have two new members, well, not new members, but who haven't been here yet. Representative Sensenmura also brought another non-voting member to committee. Would you like to introduce us to your wonderful person?
Yeah, thank you. Representative Sensenmura. This is my daughter, Yuna, who's 6 weeks old.
Awesome. You got me by 2 weeks. Sloan will be here at some point. All right. We'll now go to public testimony on the bill. We have Grant Johnson to kick us off.
Yeah.
Thank you for coming down, Mr. Johnson. Would you please introduce yourself for the record and begin your testimony?
My name is Grant Johnson, and my wife is a family child care provider in Edina. I am her relief. So I go through all the training and I help her in any way that I can with her business. I often am the one who goes downstairs. We do it in the lower level of our house. I go down and rile them up before I leave to do my work, and she gets mad at me, but I help her get them outside, and I take over for her when she needs to see a doctor or do something else, because to try to avoid inconveniencing families. What we've experienced in the, I guess it's 37 or 38 years that she's been doing licensed in-home daycare, is that the costs continue to go up, and our costs in utilities, insurance, taxes have skyrocketed in the last several years. We are members of several neighborhood groups, and we see the groups of people attending those training sessions and the groups themselves, they are old like we are. We don't see very many new young faces. And I think that we need to provide some home-based daycare for those families who want to have the opportunity not to have to go to a center. And it tends to be a little bit cheaper, but it's not as attractive a small business to be in as anymore as it used to be.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. We will now move to down the list to Cindy Cunningham from Leading Care Public Policy. She is joining us via Zoom. So, Ms. Cunningham, would you introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony? And you are muted, I think.
Okay, there. Now can you hear me?
Loud and clear.
Thank you. All right, good. Thank you, technology. I would say it's kind of like a three-year-old, and we're pretty skilled at that. I appreciate the opportunity to be able to virtually love that Grant's able to be there, great representative of our family child care industry. And it is nice to be able to do it virtually. Representative Nadeau, this is a great bill, and I'm not clear, nor do I have expertise on the shift. I did testify in the Senate on this bill. So, but irregardless what was said about the demise of family child care and the impact on family is clear and real. And when we talk about those slots being filled by center, wasn't said, but is known that's at a much higher rate than what it would be at a family child care. Plus, in family child care, it is considered the culturally close relationship with our families and with our communities. We live in them, we breathe in them, and our families, when my parents drop off in the morning, I'm the person they see at the end of the day. So that continuity of care is incredibly high. So we are in a crisis. Those numbers just make me cringe. I've been around 27 years and I'm in St. Paul. We are an unfunded delegated program from the state of Minnesota. And frequently, some of the funding just isn't getting to us as programs. DHS does fully fund the centers and the certified centers as far as oversight. With this credit, or whatever it turns into, will give us support that we haven't been getting to have a business, to pay property tax, to have all the expenses. This can help stabilize. One of the pieces too is it shows programs in the state that Minnesota supports family child care. With a number of the actions that have happened over the last years with modernization, with pre-K school-based, with some of the pushes that many program providers are really saying, does the state of Minnesota really want us and support us? So I really appreciate this unique way of moving it forward and some equalizing of some of the funding to family child care. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Cunningham, for your testimony. That exhausts the list we had. Is there any members of the public here who would like to testify either for or against House File 633? Anybody? All right, seeing no further testimony, I'll close public testimony. Are there any member questions? Representative Coulter.
Excuse me. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm going to preface my comments by saying that a lot of the things I want to talk about sound like they should be talked about in the tax committee. And I am disappointed that we don't have a property tax division anymore. But I promise I'm getting to a place that is relevant to this committee. So I just want to be clear about that. Representative Nadeau, I actually do want to thank you for bringing this idea forward. I have to confess, I liked your bill better before your amendment. I think it would be better done as a credit over a market value exclusion, partly because I think, you know, to what Ms. Cunningham just said, if we as a state are going to say we value something, we should be willing to pay for it. And this, to be clear, this market value exclusion does have a cost. The cost is just now going to be dispersed to local property taxpayers, not to the state. But it does, in fact, have a cost. But my first question is, I'm looking at it's lines 1.17 and 1.18 of the DE1, and I just want to make sure I'm reading this correctly. But in essence, any property qualifying for this exclusion in your bill would not be eligible for the homestead market value exclusion. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Representative Nadeau.
Oh, sorry, Mr. Chair. Yes, that is correct.
Okay.
Representative Coulter.
Thank you. And I bring that up because what we in essence would be doing is asking in-home providers to choose between this market value exclusion and their homestead market value exclusion, which I know a lot of folks do rely on. So I think we just need to be clear that any lowering of property taxes that might come as a result of a property taking this market value exclusion would be partially offset, at least, by the fact that they would not be able to take the homestead market value exclusion. And so this is another reason, frankly, why I think it would be better as a credit, because I think it would be, frankly, more bang for our buck in terms of what we would be funding here. And the other point that I really just wanted to raise on this is, you know, when we're talking about market value exclusions, we're talking about something that is based on the value of the property, right? And so in terms of the policy of this committee, what that means is that this market value exclusion will favor more expensive homes. It will, which means it will likely more strongly benefit folks in wealthier communities. It will more strongly benefit folks in the metro area. And so, you know, all of that is to say, you know, as we're talking about the support that I think we all agree we need to provide to child care providers, and in particular, family child care centers, this just does not, like I said, I liked it better the other way, you know? This just does not feel like the really the best way to move forward with this. So happy to continue this conversation with you. I do think your head's in the right place. I just don't think this bill is. Thank you.
Representative Nadeau.
And thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Representative Coulter. You know, there's a lot of exclusions in 272. This adds a new one at 36. Properties are not eligible for dual exclusions. In the case that, you know, there's not one market value homestead exclusion that would ever come close to a 50% reduction. And so this would provide a massive 50% reduction in property tax payment for a provider of this. I guess I don't discriminate based on how much someone's house is worth, whether or not 50% of that value should be on an $100,000 house or an $80,000 house. I think this is a fair approach. The reason that I move this to an exclusion is that, and I get it, there's some people like to spend more money. And you're right, this will be covered by increasing in the shares of those other unique taxing authorities that are within this jurisdiction. There is an inherent value to communities that allow in-home providers and they're having them in their community. And I don't think there's one person that wouldn't be happy to do this. I mean, and this share goes on all, it doesn't matter if it's a vet exclusion, if it's a conservation easement, and we can go right down the list where, and you can argue that we shouldn't have exclusions, and I appreciate that. And you can argue that we should have, everything should be a credit, and I appreciate that too. I think right now that the easiest way to try to get this bill done, to actually provide relief and provide capacity for in-home child care providers that hasn't happened ever, is starting right here. And so I hope you can vote for it. We can move it forward. When we go to taxes, there will be a slight tax impact, and we'll have to discuss that. And I would love to have your support and help me shepherd this through. So thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Coulter.
Thank you, Representative Doe. Representative Hanson.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you, Representative Nadeau. I will agree with Representative Coulter that I appreciate the unique approach to this, and I do agree that it's something that needs to be done. My son went to in-home daycare his whole time that he was there, so I very much see the value in them. I'm just curious, to the point of it benefiting folks with larger property market values, and you kind of touched on this a little bit, but why not find some other way to measure this? Would it be like maybe by enrollment numbers or by, you know, geography of what is or isn't available in that region? I'm just saying, I just feel like choosing just flat market value like this is a little bit hard for me, because I would agree that I would rather see this as a credit and something we could invest in at the state. And I'm just curious, while you were knocking doors, did anybody tell you that they would support increasing their own property taxes to subsidize something like this?
Representative
Doe. And thank you, Mr. Chair. So back to the not discriminating. I don't care what a home value is worth. It doesn't matter. I mean, the people that choose, they're special people that choose to open their homes and take care of infants and toddlers and preschoolers. And they come from all different walks of life with all different abilities to afford houses and boats and other things. And so I look at it as a way, once again, I think it's a common sense approach to try to bolster and provide that incentive. Do I think that a lot of very wealthy homes are going to all of a sudden decide to get in the child care business because they can save, you know, up to 50% of their property taxes? I don't think so. But if they wanted to do that, you know, I would welcome that. And to, you know, I guess to think that if we had a credit, and I'm not arguing against the credit, maybe we'll put it back. That's the way this bill is drafted in the Senate. And so hopefully we're going to be able to have conversations on both sides. But in order to have a credit, there has to be an actual fiscal note, and there has to be money, and we need to appropriate it to it. And I am more than happy if everybody here wants to come up with the money to do this. We could have and should have done it last session when we had boatloads of money, but it was not a priority. And so this is an attempt to start. I mean, there's a lot of things that we need to work in childcare, a lot. This is an attempt to try to start rebuilding back the 6,000 family care providers that have walked off the job because of an inability to be able to, you know, do the jobs that they wanted to do. This is just an attempt to try to get it, try to create a more even playing field.
Vice Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative Nadeau. I just think that it's really important that in this day and age of our economy that we talk about there are haves and have-nots. As a single mom living paycheck to paycheck, I know folks in my neighborhood, they are struggling to keep their in-home daycares open a lot harder than folks maybe on the other side of my district who don't struggle to make ends meet, like you mentioned, those with boats and cabins and that sort of thing. So I think that there's some work to do around really kind of assessing, is this the best way to fund something like this? Again, I appreciate where you're going with this, and I support this, and I would be happy to help with that. But I do think we need to be aware that when we're giving tax breaks to folks who don't need them, I think that's an important piece to talk about. We're seeing a lot of bills that have been introduced this session that are cutting taxes or asking for tax exemptions on whole lots of things. And not as many revenue raisers. And so I think it's important to kind of see, you know, which side is asking us to cut more of those things and make that assessment. But I do think that the family child care providers who are asking for help the most in my community do not have boats and cabins. And I think that's important to understand that that would directly relate back to the fact that their homes are not worth as much. And so they're not even able to take on as many kids because their homes aren't as large. And so finding just a way to maybe get creative with this, I think adding enrollment numbers or adding geographical saturation or something like that might be a way to improve this a little bit.
Chair Katiza Batun.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Nadeau, for bringing this forward. I know it's your first time on this committee, and I'm really glad that you are here. I take a little bit of issue as somebody who served on this committee for the last three terms plus this one, that childcare and early education hasn't been a priority. We also made some really tremendous property tax breaks for particularly seniors and renters and all sorts of things that happened in the 2023-2024 session. I am curious, potentially, if fiscal staff could assist. You said that since it's not structured as a credit, and I don't pretend to be a tax expert, I've never served on that committee, so I'm learning as I go. The fiscal impact that it will have a small cost just based on funds that will not be coming into the state. Is that correct, Mr. Berg? Could you potentially,
I think Mr. Swanson.
Okay, that would be helpful. Thank you.
Mr. Swanson, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair and Representative Katiza Batun, Jared Swanson with House Research. So assuming this bill goes to taxes, it will get a revenue estimate. And because it's structured as an exclusion rather than a credit, a bulk of the benefit provided to the property owners who would receive the exclusion gets paid for, as Representative Nadeau mentioned, through shifting that tax onto other nearby properties. The state cost comes into play in that a portion of those taxes that get shifted onto homeowners, and that can increase the homeowner property tax refunds. So typically shifts like this score a small increase in PTR.
Okay. So I guess I'm the chair now for a moment. So do you have follow-up?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for that. I appreciate that. I think it's just important for us to kind of understand how the money moves around and whether or not it's going to come at a cost to the taxpayer. I think, you know, we'll be hearing throughout this session some really innovative and creative ideas on whether or not we should, you know, give money back directly to childcare providers, whether we should increase scholarships and subsidies directly to families so that they can pay providers more funds. And ultimately, I think that we do have the same goal. The chair has talked about this numerous times since our first hearing, even just last week, about how, you know, I don't think that it's a difference of priority for the folks who sit on this committee. I think it's just kind of how we look at the different options. And so I think that bringing this forward and the consideration that I'll get in the tax committee, where people understand those sorts of things better than I do, will be really helpful in shaping this potentially going forward. So thank you.
Thank you, Chair Katizwa-Toon. I do have a few comments to make on this bill, because one thing that we're going to focus on this committee is lowering costs, because we can throw money, but that also does tend to drive up costs. I love early learning scholarships. I'm authoring a bill to that effect, but we cannot just address one side of the equation. And one beautiful thing about this bill is it directly lowers costs of childcare. That's a big deal. It's hard to lower the cost of childcare. Looking at the regulations, it's hard to figure out how you can do best while maintaining safety, but what we can do is lower the tax burden. You know, I wouldn't even mind seeing this expanded to centers. I'm sure some people in this room might get very excited about that. But this is a great way we can directly lower costs without having an inflationary effect on what people are paying. So I think this is the right approach. Some of the concerns are valid, but one thing I want to mention is with sharing the property tax burden among your community. Very relevant. But if that community has more affordable childcare than surrounding communities, you better believe, and I know this committee believes, affordable childcare is a key economic driver that makes a big difference. So if you have more development, more people moving in, you might not even end up with higher property taxes. You'd end up with a better community with more affordable childcare. So I think this just, I am very happy to hear this bill and excited to see it move forward, because I think it addresses precisely what we need to address in a maybe not perfect, but in a simple way. And what we've seen is when state government gets too complex, things don't tend to work as we speak. So dismounting my soapbox, I will turn it over to Representative Vice Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Chair. I like where you're going with this, and I just wanted to ask about, to the point of lowering childcare costs. Is there anything, Representative Nadeau, you think you could add to this bill that would ensure that this cost savings in this form of this exclusion would go to lowering costs as opposed to, I know a lot of folks are just behind right now, let's be honest, right? Like just affording their day-to-day stuff is really hard. But have you thought of any kind of guarantees or just, you know, validations that we could put in here that would make sure that this money would go directly to lowering the cost of care?
Representative Nadeau.
Yeah, and thank you. I will think about that. I can't think of anything right now. You know, these are small businesses. Their costs are there. I think that the chair is right. I think it does. It lowers, you know, the cost, a cost that a small business has. So I think it therefore, in this case, they're in the childcare business, so it therefore does lower the cost. But I will think about that. I mean, I am a champion of evaluations and trying to make sure that we're tying those things together and this is, even though this is an exclusion, it's almost like, you know, a tax expenditure. These are public dollars that are being used for a particular business. So I will try to come up with something. Thank you.
Vice Chair Hansen, the reason I hesitated about recognizing you here is try and have the lead of your side of the aisle and ours end it. And we had another member who wanted to speak who then I was like, well, we were wrapping up and they generously did not then struck their name. So that's why I was hesitant, because we don't, the decorum of this committee, our goal is, you know, we can bend it every so often, which is fine, but the leaders of each caucus are the last one to talk, with the exception of the bill author. That's why, just so you know why I was being weird and hesitant recognizing you, that's all. Vice Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Chair. I will say I am familiar with decorum. Thank you.
Representative Nadeau, final thoughts on the bill.
And thank you, members, and thank you, Mr. Chair. I do believe that this bill, it's a work in progress, and I hope that you guys will help me, like I say, shepherd it through. I do believe that it lowers costs to family care providers. I believe that family care is one of the lowest, most affordable options for licensed care, and in rural Minnesota, it's oftentimes the only option. I think there's a lot of things that we need to work on this session regarding overregulation, paperwork, training requirements. We're going to be doing a lot of those things. I'll try to be as innovative and open as possible. But I think that this simple House File 633 is hopefully the first start of many that are going to come out of this committee that are going to help us increase capacity and drive down the care. And increase the opportunities for families in Minnesota. So with that, I don't know if did I make the motion to move this to taxes?
I've got a cover for you, sir.
Okay, awesome.
So I'll renew Representative Nadeau's motion to re-refer House File 633 as amended to the Committee on Taxes. All those in favor say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The motion prevails, and you're on your way. 56. Right, and we will move on to House File 656 from Representative Zalesnikar, our very own committee member. Thank you for joining us. House, you may move your bill before the committee.
Thank you, Chair and members. This is a really simple bill. This is a bill that affects freestanding centers. I have a center in my community, and I'm sure you may have some in yours. But this is allowing the commissioner to consider a variance for a child care center that is short the square footage that's required by the allocation factor that they have per child. So this gives them 100 square feet variance. How big is 100? Imagine the most popular rug ordered online is a 10 by 10. That's 100 square feet. That's the kind of space I'm talking. I'm not talking about this room. It's a very small space. And so what this bill does is it gives facilities flexibility. The example I'm going to show explain to you the provider that I was going to have testify today is providing childcare, so they couldn't wait any longer to testify. But they support this bill, and the issue is when I tour the facility, we have the one teacher for seven toddlers, and so there were two teachers. There should be 14 kids, right? Just straight math. You could have 14 kids. To have the proper ratios. But they had to have 12 kids. And so in talking to them, I was like, why? I mean, we have kids, we have families calling me every month, sometimes weekly, saying we're on a waiting list for a year. We're on a waiting list for 2 years. And I find out that there's kids waiting at this provider too. And the reality is they can only take 12 kids because they've written a variance to the state of Minnesota. And they keep denying the variance. They keep asking for a variance for 100 square feet. So I looked at the entire property. It's a pretty decent, it's actually a very large child care center, and with outdoor space, indoor space, like you would expect. So sat down and thought, what could we do? We have to find some solutions. Two kids not in service is a big deal to families. And so what this bill is allows for that to happen. And it gives a pathway for that variance to go forward, and that's what this bill is about. A simple fix. It was these type of variances were common when I did assisted livings where we had vulnerable adults too. The square footage requirement for children is 35 square foot per child. Give you an example on the assisted living side, it's 70 square feet. So they have that the ruling is 35 square feet, but if you've been in a toddler area and you take 10 square feet out, 100 square feet of a rug, when I was there, guess where all the toddlers are? Right over there in one corner. They're all playing blocks, or half are playing blocks and the other half are on this corner reading, and that's typical for toddlers. and when they're learning and when they're in your house probably too. So members, that's what this bill is about, is giving flexibility, trying to find some solutions that don't compromise safety and also allow providers to have the staffing ratios there. They have two teachers and they're two children short, which significantly affects your financials on an ongoing basis. So that's the bill.
Thank you, Representative Zalesnikar. And your testifier was on Zoom, but because that's one problem we have with this committee is I hate Zoom myself, but a lot of the folks who really want to petition their government, well, they're working. So we try to accommodate them as we can. Representative Zalesnikar.
Chair West, thank you. And to that point, that's exactly the same reason why, you know, providers can't always come here from greater Minnesota. They're providing care. And Zoom doesn't always, Zoom cut in and out a couple times waiting. And so that member and provider 100% supports this bill. And when I've talked to other people, I've been touring the state to see some common sense things we can do to help people in ways that we can help. And this is one of them. So I offer this to you for the members to understand what this bill is. It's 100 square foot, a rug, a variance for a rug size.
Thank you, Representative Zalesnikar. Is there any members of the public which would like to testify on House File 656? Oh. And two things. We need to move your bill in front of the committee, mm-hmm. and we need to address the amendment. Mm-hmm. And I did not see any testifiers of the public. So Representative Zalesnikar moves that House File 656 will be laid over for possible inclusion. And we will address, do you want to move your A2 amendment? And explain it, please. Representative Zalesnikar.
Thank you, Chair. And yes, I'd like to move the amendment for this. This just changes words. This just makes sure that the licensing requires the center to have 35 square feet, that the commissioner can offer that variance. They would give the variance for that.
Is there any discussion to the A2 amendment? Seeing no discussion, all those in favor say aye.
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 All those opposed? The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Now the bill is in the shape you would wish. Are there any member questions to the bill? Representative Sensor Murray.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Zalesnikar, for bringing this bill. You know, I think you addressed it well. I think we're trying to balance in this committee flexibility for our providers and safety, which I know as a parent is a huge concern. You know, and I will say that, you know, when I was looking for childcare for my son, you know, space is one thing that I consider, right? I totally understand what you're saying, and I've seen it where everyone is on the rug or everyone is at the paint station. But, like, we do know that especially, you know, if a kid is having a hard day, they might need some extra space. And so I understand why, you know, we might need more space than you just kind of see when you look. I'm wondering, actually, though, my question is more for DHS of the licensing staff. Like, and I don't know if we have someone from DHS here.
And they reluctantly stand up and walk up. Sorry for editorializing. Representative Sensimura.
Thank you. So, you know, I know that when we are kind of putting in these standards, right, the standards are 35 feet per child, and then sounds like there's a process where you can apply for a variance. My question is, you know, what are the other factors that you consider if a center is asking for a variance? Are you asking for pictures? Are you going to the center? Are you looking at, you know, different types of children that they have there? Can you just kind of explain a little bit about what that process looks like? Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Would you please introduce yourself for the record and respond to Representative Sensenmayer's question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ari Dinian, the Legislative Director at the DHS Office of Inspector General. I will say that I don't have my licensing staff here with me today, so I can't speak to all of the things that they consider when looking at a variance. I will say that there are some things related to space requirements that we can't vary. And that's related to things that are in the state fire code. We have to make sure that our space requirements align with the fire code. And so we work with the state fire marshal to align licensing requirements with the fire code. But I can certainly follow up with my folks and get more details about what factors we look at when we issue variances.
Representative Sensenmayer.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you to the testifier. Yeah, I think learning a little bit about that interaction would be helpful. Like, again, you know, I could see that we have standards that maybe are anticipating emergency situations, right? And so would love to know about that. You know, I think we need to be creative. And so, Representative Zlesnikar, I thank you for trying to be creative. But I would just like to kind of better understand what process does the DHS go through? What are some of the considerations? What, you know, would this be putting us into misalignment with some other safety standards that we have? Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Sensor Murrah. Some of those questions would be lovely to share before the committee if you talk to your licensing staff, particularly on the variance things. I'm also interested. Representative Zlesnikar, do you have any comments or should we move on?
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative Sensor Murrah. You're correct. I mean, the fire marshals are looking at your exits, sprinklers, the conditions like that. So that's what I looked at, too, when I toured this setting. And so this pathway would give that opportunity for the local inspector in a community, whether it's in the cities or here, is what I imagine would happen, where they would actually do a site visit to make sure those safety things. And that's typical in assisted living and nursing home world, too, where you have vulnerable adults. In the toddler world, in the space that this would be for this room, they're ambulatory. So they're also looking, can they evacuate, you know, with you? And so there's factors like that, and we can get that information. I can report back to Children and Family.
Thank you. Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Very good bill. Thank you. Of course, I hear that. You hear that often. Great bill. Thank you. This is a very good common sense bill, and thank you for bringing it. I certainly hope that we can get this through the gate. Question for staff, or nonpartisan staff, regarding the centers. Are they exempt from the state general property tax or part of the general state property tax?
Ms. Mock.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Annie Mock with House Research. Representative McDonald, we'll have to get back to you on that. Our tax expert just left, so we'll get back to you on that.
Mr. Berg, you seem very eager. No? Okay.
Mr. Chair, I don't know for sure either.
Representative McDonald.
That is my question. I will just wait to hear back from you. Thank you. And Representative Zlesnikar, thanks for a good bill. I look forward to voting yes.
Representative Coulter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Didion kind of stole my bit here because I was going to ask this question. You mentioned that you, when you visited a center, you considered some of the things that relate to sort of fire code. I mean, that's a lot of times why space requirements exist. Have you consulted the state fire marshal on this bill?
Representative Zlesnikar.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative Coulter. Yes, I did. Yes.
Thank you.
And
then,
Representative Coulter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then just one other question. I'm just curious about the way that this bill is written, because originally it was written that the commissioner shall consider a variance, and now with the amendment, it said the commissioner must grant the variance. And I guess I'm curious why go this route as opposed to just sort of rewriting law and rules around ratios and space standards and that sort of thing. Like, why, if the goal is to say we want to allow this, why not just allow it rather than go through the variance process?
Representative Zlesnikar.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Rep. Coulter, for that question. I think ideally, you know, writing a bill to say just grant it would be great, but there's a process for a variance, so it's following the variance process, which is what I'm familiar doing in healthcare. So in a child care center, I understand why they have it, because it ties to public or to safety, life safety code, and those type of items. So I just, instead of consider is a very vague word, and that has problematic in many settings, healthcare and child care. So must grant is clear. And so if they need 100 square feet, that would be the max they must grant. And then it would move to the next layer of life safety code.
Representative Coulter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We can maybe talk about this offline. I guess I'm just, I understand the point that you made, But if the language now with the amendment that was just adopted says that the commissioner must grant the variance, it seems to me like we're talking about a distinction without a difference here. If the commissioner has to grant the variance anyway, it sounds like it's just sort of a fact of how things are judged. And it just feels to me like it's not the most efficient way of doing what I think you're trying to do. So that's all. Thank you.
Representative Lesnikar, on this, so going to must grant, that's still subject to fire code, correct? Mm-hmm. Let the record show that Representative Lesnikar is nodding her head yes. Representative
yes.
Lesnikar.
Okay. Yes.
Okay, sorry. Any more questions on the bill? Oh. Representative Hemmingson-Yeager.
Thank you. Maybe just kind of a clarifying question, just how I'm reading it maybe differently. Mm-hmm. It talks about 100 square feet of what would be required for the maximum enrollment based on the center's numbers and qualifications of the staff. I know, like, particularly in centers, they have, like, a toddler room and an infant room and a preschool room. Mm-hmm. Are they going to have to grant a variance of 100 square feet for each of those enrollment, like, buckets? So, like, you have 100 square feet for infants, plus 100 square feet for toddlers, plus 100 square feet for preschoolers.
Mm-hmm. Representative Lesnikar.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the question, Representative. I understand what you're saying. I think that's the piece that it would be 100 square feet. You know, just I looked at the building, and you're right. There's all different rooms in the center that I look that this specific center, and in really any center. So it would just allow the avenue of up to could be 50 square feet, it could be 20 square feet. I mean, it would be up to is within 100 square feet. 100 square feet is just the maximum. So the request could be varied based on the location, based on the scope of what they're providing. So it wouldn't always be 100 square feet. It could be 70, like I said. It could be various numbers. And most of it is just off a little bit is what you'll find. So I just had to set a number, and I'm open to work with that as this bill moves through and as I meet more with to talk through the life safety codes with the departments to look at those specific things. But I wanted to get this bill presented and to start trying to find solutions.
Representative Hemmingson-Yeager.
Yeah, you might just want to consider maybe, like, altering the language to specify that specifically, because I even think, like, you know, 100 square feet, 400 square feet in a center, a larger building compared mm-hmm. to, like, a home. Mm-hmm. If someone were to interpret this as, like, oh, well, I can do 100 square feet for a couple more infants or 100 square feet for this and this, like, that amps up, and then pretty soon I think we're out of the scope of what you intended with the bill. So that's my biggest concern with paragraph C, and then the safety thing is still a big concern of mine too. So, thanks.
Seeing no further member questions, Representative Lesnikar, would you like to close us out?
Thank you, Chair West, and thank you, members. You have my word that I will continue working with you to find the best pathway forward that answers our questions for the variables that exist. The goal is to have a solution for a real issue where we have in one provide. If it's happening one place, it's a good indicator it's happening other places. And so we want to make sure that we don't have any barrier that we could be easily removing to allow another child to find quality child care and another family. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Lesnikar, and I will renew your motion. That's House File 656 as amended be laid over for possible inclusion in a future omnibus bill. Next on the agenda is House File 655, also from the Venerable Representative Lesnikar. Representative Lesnikar, would you please move your bill and tell us more about it?
Thank you, Chair West and members. This bill is another bill that's...
Representative, could you move your bill first?
Oh, sorry. I'd like to move my bill, House File 655.
To be laid over for possible inclusion in a later omnibus bill, and if you could move your amendment as well before we get to it.
The amendment is to ensure that the wording is two. It exempts two of the child care providers.
Yeah. So, Representative Lesnikar moves the A1 amendment, and I guess, Representative Lesnikar, we had a little discussion about the amendment not being exactly what we were after. Mm-hmm. Would you like to orally amend your amendment?
Yes. And so the amendment would be that it would exclude up to two of the caregiver's own children for the purposes of licensed capacity.
So Representative Zlesnikar orally amends her amendment. You want to, on 1.4, delete from delete to? Why am I even doing this? Representative Annie Mock. Sorry, Ms. Mock. Sorry for the demotion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will go ahead and repeat what the oral amendment is. So Representative Zlesnikar moves to amend the amendment labeled H0655A1 as follows. Page 1, line 4, delete 2, and insert 4, and. And that's the amendment.
Thank you, Ms. Mock.
That's not right.
All right, so we will. Any discussion on the oral amendment? Representative Zlesnikar.
Chair West, my question is, that amendment for some reason is not in my deal. Is it say two? It's the amendment is supposed to be for two children to be exempt. Thank you.
We don't need that in the amendment because it's already
in the bill. That is what the result will be when we adopt the oral amendment that we just discussed. Mm-hmm. So I will move to a vote on the amendment to the A1 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
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 Thank you.
Opposed? The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Now with the A1 amendment as amended, is there anything you'd like to add before the vote, or Representative Zlesnikar?
No.
Thank you. We will now vote on the A1 amendment. Representative Zlesnikar moves that the A1 amendment be adopted. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. All right. Representative Zlesnikar, anything to add to your bill before we go to public testimony?
No. Thank you, Chair and members. As you all are aware, family child care has lost its grounding in the state of Minnesota by over 50% in many of the communities, whether it's suburbs, Minneapolis, St. Paul, or greater Minnesota. And this is a concerning item because many of the facilities that run 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, and three shifts, many of them use family child care models because most centers are open Monday through Friday, not weekends, not holidays. And so building back this model is really important for the ability for us to have emergency services, health care, in all the ways that we do. There are many states that allow 12 in family child care, and I've been spending a lot of time on this since I started on this committee in 2023 to really look at what's happening. Illinois, South Dakota, Oklahoma, Maryland, Ohio, and Virginia are just some states that are doing this. And while the number is going from 10 to 12, what I want members to know is that the infant ratio, infant toddler, right now you can have one infant or two and two toddlers or two infants and one toddler. Basically, you get to three children that are in that category. That would not change by going from 10 to 12. So where we would see the home provider be able to have two more children in the space would be the preschool level or the school age level. And the school age children sometimes come before and after school. They also come when school's out, summers, all those different programs. So it allows flexibility for people. And I used it in that capacity because there's times when you have a center that's closed, might follow the school schedule, but you still have to be at work. So it allows us to just have flexibility in the model of childcare. So that's what this bill is. It allows the family provider, many of them are having children themselves, and that's how this program grew, to have family childcare providers in the past. And so that's what this bill is all about, is to allow some of those opportunities for the older age child within the family child care provider. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Zlesnikar. And yes, that's why one of the features of this A1 amendment is the refining for a critical need of before and after school care for school-aged children in particular. Do we have any members of the public who would like to testify?
Cindy Cunningham is scheduled to testify.
Oh, he's just running away. All right. All right. Cindy Cunningham, would you please introduce yourself and begin your testimony?
Yes, as soon as I get my technology here, thanks. Hi, Cindy Cunningham, family child care provider in St. Paul, 27 years, leading care public policy chair, and I have worked in the public policy legislative world for about 15 years. So sometimes too much information, sometimes too much experience. But I think I've got a good handle on kind of where this industry has been and where we're at now. I am testifying on behalf of Leading Care in support of this bill, modifying the ratios. Talk to any family child care provider, the age ratios will drive all of us pretty crazy. The one thing that I want to bring up with this, I mean, if you think about it, sorry, I am watching children right next to me. many individuals, some would say most, enter this industry with their own children in tow. I frankly did it many years ago with three children. They may be passionate about early childhood ed, have current or past experience in settings, have educational background which fit early care, and possibly can't find affordable and quality care of their own children. We open businesses with our hearts, homes, and share our families with others to ensure loving care for their children, to ensure that they can work or improve their lives through school and other endeavors. And what is the cost? This bill goes on the income part where the tax bill goes on the expense part. We receive no financial support for our own children. There are no qualifying child care tax credits. We cannot claim them on the food program. And we're exempt from all other considerations, including counting for the Great Start compensation. Our children take up slots in our ratios, limiting the potential income ability. These ratios include our children up until the day they turn 11. This limits our income at all age categories until that point in time. This is true, including when a second parent or a relative takes the child to another space of the house. Dad comes home, mom comes home, and they want to spend time with their child in another part of the house, their own child is still considered in ratio. I included some comments about potential income loss, but we're looking at easily $1,200 a month just for two children of income that we can't realize. Yes, we're saving money by not expending child care costs, but that cost is not acknowledged in any of the financial supports or the tax system. Financial success of the business means optimizing income and limiting expenses. We are diligent in the expenses aspect. We can do nothing at this point in time to optimize income with the ratios restrict the potential. There's been an interesting communication, also, I guess I'll put it with an engagement with DHS licensing. March last year, they made an announcement to licensors, not to programs, providers, that our children were to be deemed looked at differently as because they are in their own home. And so that is on supervision, product, and other aspects of our care for our children, not the ratios. This aspect, then I found out some detail with the DHS, we discussed it in July of last year, and at this point in time, DHS doesn't have an official statement to programs. We're just waiting for that. And magically, it appeared in the second draft of the modernization. It is recognized that our children are in their home, and we as parents have the right to balance our care for them with other children in our care. In other words, that modernization draft, I read it as that is what DHS is willing to back, and it does allow it for flexibility.
I apologize for interrupting.
Say what?
If you can wrap up your testimony, please.
Yeah. We love being with our own children, yet the loss of income potential is real limiting.
Thank you, Ms. Cunningham. Sorry.
Yeah, I appreciate the support. Thank you.
Any member discussion? Representative Coulter.
Thank you. Excuse me. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I probably should know this. I'll start off by saying that what ages are defined as, I don't know if this is a question for nonpartisan staff or the author can answer, what ages are defined as preschool and school age?
Do we have some representatives?
Go ahead. Take it.
Okay, somebody clearly demonstrate if they wanted to. Ms. Mock.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So preschooler is a child who is at least 24 months old up to 5 years old. And then school age starts at 5 years of age, but is younger than 11.
Representative Coulter.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Mock. That's helpful. So I think a lot of concerns that folks have, myself included, relate to sort of safety around these kinds of questions. And I will also say that the conversations that I have had with providers, every once in a while someone brings up ratios, but none of the providers in my own district or that I have talked to elsewhere have viewed this as anything more than sort of a tinkering around the edges approach. But I guess when we're talking about safety, you know, I have two kids at home. One of them is a three-year-old, and we'll choose the word deliberate in the way that she moves. And I mean, the sort of the rhetorical question that I kind of want to ask is, how many three-year-olds can any of us carry in a fire? And I think that's, you know, we talk about regulations as they sort of come out of nowhere. But the regulations that exist do so not just to sort of deal with the everyday or the best circumstances, but recognizing that we need to be thinking about the most challenging, the most trying circumstances. So I just have some real concerns with the approach that this bill is taking. Thank you.
Representative Zeleznikar.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative Coulter, for your feedback. I think that this bill is a common sense bill for real concerns for family child care. Many of the communities in the state have families that have come from 11, 12 children. And while I have two, I have certainly watched children play and visited centers across the state and family child care providers to see that not much has changed since our kids were young in the sense of their play time, their creative time, and their learning time, and their nap time, and all those things. And so the models have changed, but the issues are still the same for parents. And so allowing them to have the opportunity to have quality care in a setting that is stable and loving and doing great things, I think is what we need to be doing. Going around the tree the same way is not going to help Minnesota, because they're closing by the week centers and family child care. And so that's hurting all 87 counties across the state of Minnesota as I stand here and testify today. And so we've done some great things. I was on the committee last year, and, you know, there's a new department. And while we have a new Department of Children and Family, we have, I think, $20 million investment, it's not going to provide a child care slot. It's not going to do that. We have to find some solutions that are going to be a meaningful solution for the people to work in our communities. Because I get calls every week on child care, every week, whether it's Two Harbors, Proctor, Rice Lake, Hermantown, and all the townships, asking what are we doing to make sure there's more slots in the state. Meaningful change. And so I'm trying to do some reasonable things that I could live with as a parent, and I've been in some great child care centers and some great family providers in the time that I used it to run 24-hour nursing homes. And so did all the people that worked with me. They had the same experiences. So I think that's what this bill is all about.
Representative Altendorf.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative Zeleznikar, for bringing this bill. Question is simple, and I'm not sure if you know this or not, but in a like preschool type setting, I mean, do you know those numbers that, you know, if we're talking about a preschool child, like how many would be allowed in a preschool room?
Representative Zeleznikar.
Thank you, Chair West, and thank you for the question. I think if Ms. Mack could comment on that so I don't misstate it. I think I know the number, but I'm not sure if it's 12 for the preschool.
Ms. Mack.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For preschoolers, the ratio for preschoolers is for staff to children is 1 to 10. And that's the same in preschools in like childcare settings, but also in public school-based preschool programs.
Representative Altendorf.
Thank you, Chair. And I just want to thank you for bringing this bill. I have to say, I think coming into this meeting today, I really expected the Democrat Party to be more supportive. I think we brought forth three very common sense bills. As Representative Nadeau pointed out, we are in a crisis of childcare, going from 12,000 to now we're approximately 5,000 in home. And these are just what I would say is like solution-based answers that are not really that different from what's already happening. That, and what I think there's a real divide here is we continue to see, like, we're incentivizing behavior, we're trying to come up with solutions, and I just would really like to encourage the minority party to be looking with us in that mindset of solutions when we're hitting this crisis in daycare right now. Thank you.
Representative Hemmingson-Yeager. Representative Zelezkar.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative Altendorf. I think that the situation that we're in right now just requires finding some solution. In the family child care model, it's very often in these numbers are the kindergartners, the first graders that you do not want home alone when you go to work in the morning, and their bus might come at 8:30 or 8. So in the family model, there are many children that are there before school and after school, an hour each way. They're in this number, these numbers. So you imagine trying to have a financial portfolio work for your home. There are also children that come for the summers, and there are also people that come during the Christmas break or a holiday, any holiday break that's 2 weeks, 3 days, that if they're in a center in the schools and they're on the school schedule, they're closed. That means the family has no backup. And a lot of the people that contact me want to have the backup. And the only way for those children to be able is if we have flexibility for the family model to make sure that there's somebody that can provide for care in the home model for the breaks, the summers, before or after school. And so that preschool level is generally going to be the three kids, four kids, that's all they're going to have. The rest of them are in school coming before and after summers. They're the older kids. Because most parents don't want, I don't know what age you're leaving your kids at home alone, but it varies for parents, and they want to have a model that they can have them structured and supervised and allow for learning and play and all those things. And so this is what this allows for, is that flexibility when there's more than one child in a family and they're aging into the next group. But it doesn't change the infant and the toddler count. There's only going to be three kids that are either an infant or a toddler, and the rest are going to be the other ages as I've defined. I hope that's helpful. Thank you.
Representative Hemmingson-Yeager.
Thanks. I know, like, you and I weren't in the legislature back in, like, 2018, 2019, but I do know there's, like, the shadow of the CCAP fraud back then, and I feel like this was part of the concern with some of that CCAP fraud, was that people were basically defrauding the system because they were having their own kids in the care. Have you looked into that at all, and would you be concerned about going backwards and going back to that? Should this go into law?
Representative Zelesnikar.
Thank you, Chair West, and thank you, Representative Hemmingson-Yeager. I'm not concerned. I mean, we had CCAP fraud going on recently. I think $500 million or $250 million, whatever the number is, we've had fraud going on in feeding our future. I'm sorry, misquoted. But yes, there was CCAP fraud. But I believe there's trackable data on how they have to report their things. And so if you have accountability systems set up, which is the whole point we're doing in all the agencies with fraud and tracking and abuse, whether it's feeding our future or transportation, anything you're billing should have accountability back. Families should have it, centers should have it, transportation should have it, substance abuse, any program that we're doing here should have that. Whether they're, and then the daycare world, they're licensed. Family providers are licensed by the counties, and the centers are licensed by the state. And so they do on-site visits. The only model that's not surveyed is our school-based programs. There's no surveying happening there. But on the other ones, they are tracking and looking at all those quality indicators. And that should continue. We wouldn't want that to happen in the family model. We wouldn't want it to happen in the center model, and absolutely support accountability.
All right. Seeing no other.
Chair Cortez, too.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Zeleznikar, I appreciate that you have, clearly met with a number of providers across the state. One of the things that is kind of sticking in my mind is the amount of mischief that a three-year-old could get into versus the amount of mischief that school-age kids can get into, and the interaction between school-age kids and preschoolers, because some of that interaction is happening in my own home after school every day. And, kids say the darndest things, but when they have an 11-year-old brother who is sharing some even more interesting and colorful things that he learned in fifth grade, strange things come out of babes' mouths. And so I am concerned from that perspective. I also did see one of the letters written in, and it wasn't clear, I guess, whether or not, I mean, it seems like this person actually kind of does support slight change, but she states, as Tanya Ogdahl is on the second page, whether or not if providers who have children get to include two of their own children, then we all should be allowed two extra children, because some of them have been providing childcare for years and years. And I guess I was curious, because this does seem to be a little bit more targeted during times of the day, if we have maybe explored, or if coming up in conversation with folks, if it's been more of a after hours exemption. I know one of the things that Representative Nadeau is carrying this year is to remove the sunset for the aides in childcare centers, like at pickup and drop off time. So if there's some like a time of day situation, maybe we could explore that a little bit more. I just have hesitations on increasing the number of children that a provider needs to pay attention to, because it can be really hard to. I have four kids, right? So I mean, like me feels like me versus the four of them sometimes, and I think when you introduce your own children into a mix when there's that many other children, it can really complicate things. And so I just think that we have to be really careful when we're exploring this. I mean, and heaven forbid, when I'm just talking about phrasing and mischief, but I think that there are some real concerns about potential abuse, just kids interacting with each other, wrestling, whether things get too physical, whether things get sexual. I know that that's something that's a big concern for all of us. And I just think that we just have to make sure that we're considering all of the unintended consequences.
Representative Zeleznikar.
Thank you, Chair West, and thank you, Representative and Chair Cortez Watoon. Obviously, thank you for caring about sexual and all the abuse thing, because of course I do too. I've been a mandated reporter my entire career and worked in that field. I don't think we have seen allegations in every bucket that there is. And so I think that it comes down to, having this bill really is allowing them, doesn't mean they have to, they may have 12. So the people that are doing it well and have a structured system, which I've seen, they, kids at three-year-olds and four-year-olds playing together in various ages. There's various ages in your own home, as you stated. You're dealing with that on the weekend. You're dealing with that at the evening. And so parents are parenting in those hours, and providers are providing guided care under the jurisdiction that you would expect. And so from my experience, what I've seen is that when those systems are in place and you have policies and following those guidelines and practices, that good outcomes can happen. And I think that's families are checking around, but parents spend a lot of time looking at what they want to put their person in family child care, and they generally know the person. They're in the community. They're working with them. They're going to their home. Their friends know them. They've had a long history of quality care. And so this is just allowing people to have the opportunities for before school pickup, summers, as kids age, siblings age together. A lot of people want to keep their siblings together. It's a big, important thing for a lot of families that have two children, a baby and a two-year-old and a two and a four-year-old or whatever age they are. They don't want to move them around and driving them around to multiple places, whether it's their one-stop shop at a center or one-stop shop at a family child care provider. And this gives the family the opportunity to choose what's best for them. And the surveyors are still going to be happening, and they do those models, and we have reporting systems in place for both, as we should, just like we do in assisted living and nursing homes. And then if there's anything that is outside of the expected routine of normal and quality care, then we have systems in place to deal with that, which I would expect we would, and that we would hold that in the highest regard of seriousness.
Chair Katiz-Batoon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay, I heard you said, I appreciate the response. I want to get a little bit more clarity because I'm wondering if I potentially was misunderstanding when I talked about the after-hours exemption. So you said during the before school, after school, summer breaks, perhaps either you could clarify or maybe even Ms. Mock could help us clarify, is this only regarding those non-traditional like work hour times? Or would it be all the time?
All the time.
Representative Lesnikar.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Chair Katiz-Batoon. No, it would be all the time, but it could be, there's variables is what I'm saying. For some, there's not one situation that occurs. Many families I know use a center for their child care, and they also need to use a family provider because they're closed on the school schedule. They're closed in the summer. They're closed in different times. Everybody's schedule is different. And so if that's the case, they may be the person that wants to have a model because they might not have people that live in their community that can help them with childcare. And so in those scenarios, it could be a possibility for them to use a family childcare provider. If they had the ability to go to 12, if they're at their cap at 10, there's no wiggle room. But what this bill does is it allows the provider that has 10 children to, they may, if they don't want to and they like 10 and that's their comfort lane, they could stay at 10 or they could stay at 11. And if they've been doing it for 20, 30 years and they feel like, yes, they could handle a couple preschoolers and one more school-aged child, then they would have the prerogative to consider that. And families would know then the same thing of what they're doing to make an informed decision.
Chair Katiz-Batoon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate that. I started wondering if I had misinterpreted what the previous conversation was and the intent of the bill. Have you had a specific conversation with DHS in terms of safety-related concerns, and where has that conversation gone?
Representative Lesnikar.
Thank you, Chair West, and thank you, Chair Katiz-Batoon. That is being set up right now, so we've been in communication. I just got an email half an hour before I came here. So coordinating that, and I will report back to as this moves forward to get the final touches on this. And so, yes, I am working with them.
Chair Katiba.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just final follow-up. So I appreciate all of that. I know we're going to have plenty of time this session to consider all variety of bills. This is being laid over, so it's staying in our committee's jurisdiction. Hope you'll come back to us and kind of let us know how that conversation goes offline. Get some additional feedback from, the lead and care folks and everything like that. One of the things that I think Chair West and I have kind of discussed privately is just that, you know, that we really have high hopes for bipartisanship in this committee. And I think that, you know, we all do better when we really not call into question people's motives. There are all reasons that either party would vote for or against a bill over the last 6 years, there's been a variety of no votes from minority members on this committee, and I don't think that that really means that they don't prioritize or care about children and families here in Minnesota, but I think that, you know, if we just come to the table with an open mind and be willing to have the conversation, and I think that, you know, we've really been trying to ask questions that we feel could benefit the legislation that you're bringing forward today and other issues, that we will get to a point of agreement that we can all move forward to better the system of child care, because we know that it's failing, not just in Minnesota, but all across the nation. And I think that we are in a really good spot to have those conversations. So thank you for your time.
Representative Zalesnikar, closing thoughts.
Thank you. And members, thank you for allowing me to present this bill. And I am committed to working with you as we move forward with this, as it goes to be laid over as we get to the end of session. And I will continue to work with the department and also follow up on the other ones with public safety, any fire code issues, so that we can look at some solutions that would allow flexibility in your community and my community with the goal of having quality childcare. Compromising safety isn't a part of either one of these, and it certainly isn't a part of any model I would consider. I wouldn't consider anything I wouldn't be willing to do with my own children if I was placing them today. And believe me, I've toured a lot of childcare centers in the time that I worked in my career. And so I know it's as important to you as it is to everyone in our 87 counties. And I do know that we have to find solutions this session to help open some slots somewhere, somehow, that allows for those outcomes to happen with success. So thank you. I'll continue to work on this, and I'll reach out to you. And if you have suggestions, I'm more than happy to hear them as we look at furthering the bill to make it better.
Thank you, Representative Zalesnikar. And what we saw today is our members are all about taking input and improving their bills as we move on through the process. So I will lay House File 655 on the table. Layover of possible inclusion on a later ominous bill. Okay, I'm just going to start from here. I will lay over House File 655 as amended for possible inclusion in a later omnibus bill. Thank you, members. This was a lovely committee meeting. I appreciate everybody being here, and it's a delight to see Representative Sensenmura and her little angel. We're going to have a wonderful presentation from DHS on daycare licensing tomorrow. Childcare licensing. And that, I think, will be a very spirited conversation. We will have a 15-minute late start, I believe, correct?
Yep.
So we will start at 3:15 for anybody who wants to be part of that riveting conversation. And it will be riveting because we've had a lot of issues lately in Minnesota, unfortunately, in terms of childcare licensing that we will discuss tomorrow. And without further ado, we're adjourned.